Good morning, and welcome to the West Valley News Digest. I'm Gayla Weigel, your volunteer reader. I'll be starting out with news from the West Valley View, which covers Buckeye, Avondale, Goodyear, and Tolleson. Approximately 9:20, I will read from the Wickenburg Sun, and around 9:30, I will read news from Glendale, Peoria, and Surprise. So let's get started with our first story from the West Valley View. Neighbors call for help to rid drugs and crime from Cashin. How bad are drugs and crime in Cashin? Bad enough for neighbors to invite Avondale city leaders to a meeting and demand help. At last week's community meeting, 24 Cashin residents called for action from a half dozen representatives of the city of Avondale. Some complained, with all the money and resources going into big projects in Central and North Avondale, the streets and homes of L.A., or Lower Avondale, are being ignored. We have a problem. Drug addicts roaming the streets and stealing, said retired teacher Robert Garcia, who facilitated the meeting. Garcia turned to Veronica Malone, an Avondale councilwoman, and Chief of Police Dale Nenenga. What can we do? Garcia asked them. Nenenga answered that he wanted everybody to come together. We want to be your partner. We want to come in and make your community just as good as anywhere else in Avondale. Cashin was in the news recently when local resident Christopher Mendoza, wanted for kidnapping and making threats, eluded police repeatedly. He allegedly had assistance from friends and fellow gang members in Cashin, who created diversions to help Mendoza evade several police barricades. Mendoza was eventually caught by Buckeye police officers. He has a preliminary trial Monday, February 10th. Several long-timers remembered when nights in Cashin always seemed to be filled with gunshots. The gang stuff from 20 years ago, that is down, said Mercy or Micah Arredondo, who said she has lived in Cashin all her 65 years. What's up is the drug scene. Garcia agreed. It was worse 20 years ago, he said. Senator Lupe Contreras, who represents Avondale, Tolleson, and West Phoenix, said residents should remember how they banded together against gangs from Los Angeles 2 decades ago. I've been fighting to get Cashin where it needs to be, Contreras said. He said he too has lived in Cashin all his life. I'm so proud to be from this town, he said. Then he pointed at the city representatives. But they can only do so much. We need to do things for ourselves. He brought up the idea of Mendoza being helped to avoid police and people selling drugs in the neighborhood. How are we going to get this stuff off the streets? Call 911, he said. Until we start sticking up for each other, we can't point the finger at the police. Nenenga introduced Officer Ray Emmett, a community officer who passed out his card and encouraged Cashin residents to call him about matters big or small. And the energetic Contreras encouraged the crowd to remember how far Cashin has come, especially with a police substation in the neighborhood. Our kids can play in the park now, he said, reminding his neighbors of the years when gangs fought over the turf. Avondale has done a lot of stuff for us. There's a lot of worse places than here. It just takes us to make it better. It's not going to happen overnight. The next Cashin neighborhood meeting will be at 6:30 p.m. March 26th at the Mercy House, 1249 South 111th Avenue. And that was the story, Neighbors Call for Help to Rid Drugs and Crime from Cashin. Next, Goodyear native competes on Ellen's Game of Games. For Leanne Oliver, becoming a contestant on a national TV show happened by accident, a pretty happy accident. The Goodyear native and Desert Edge High School graduate was in the studio audience during a taping of Ellen DeGeneres' daytime talk show Ellen, simply to enjoy the experience. But then a producer approached her about possibly being a contestant on Ellen's Game of Games, a spinoff highlighting some of the popular games from the talk show. Of course, Oliver had to say yes. She definitely wanted to be a contestant. I love Ellen. She's my biggest idol, said Oliver, 27, and now living in Los Angeles. The producer said they liked Oliver's energy and thought it would translate well to appearing on TV. As it turned out, they were completely right. After an official audition, Oliver was asked to come to a taping. "They told me to show up camera ready," she explained. "I had no idea what to expect. I got a tour of Warner Brothers. Everyone was so nice. It was an experience I'll never forget." Oliver was already familiar with a lot of the games usually featured on Ellen's Game of Games, as she had seen episodes from seasons 1 and 2. The show is currently in season 3 and airs Tuesday nights on NBC. Each episode features 4 games, and the 4 winners advance to the final game called Know or Go. The winner of the game has the chance to win the grand prize of $100,000. On the day of taping for a show, aired January 21st, Oliver was in the audience when DeGeneres called her up to participate in the game Runaway Bride. Oliver ran to the stage wearing a bright pink shirt, denim overalls, and pink Converse shoes. In the game, the 3 contestants put on frilly wedding dresses, then ran on a huge treadmill while Ellen launched plastic items into the air. The first bride to catch 3 pieces of plastic cake and place them on their hope chest would advance. But in true Ellen fashion, there was a catch. Like, oh, did she mention the wedding dresses weighed 20 pounds each? "It was very physical," Oliver said, "and I thought the treadmill would be set at speed 5 or 6, but it was more like 8 or 9. The high treadmill speed, coupled with wearing a huge, heavy wedding dress, plus other obstacles, made for a lot of tripping and falling, as well as laughter on the part of Ellen and the audience. At one point, Oliver was neck and neck with another contestant, with 2 pieces of cake each. Whoever got the next piece and placed it on their hope chest first would be the winner. DeGeneres launched a piece of plastic cake, and after a bit of a scuffle, Oliver nabbed it and ran to victory. Though exhausted, Oliver was all smiles, even jumping up and down and hugging Ellen afterward. "I loved meeting Ellen. She is so nice." Near the end of the episode, the 4 finalists, including Oliver, were brought back to compete in the game Know or Go. Basically, contestants stood on a tall platform and answered questions. If they got an answer wrong, they were not only out of the game, but Ellen hit a button which caused the contestant to drop. During the first round, DeGeneres asked Oliver this question: "Who is known as the friendly ghost?" Oliver answered correctly with Casper. She was safe for the moment. Another contestant wasn't so lucky, and watching them drop made Oliver very nervous. But during the second round of questions, DeGeneres asked Oliver, "What cereal slogan is the Breakfast of Champions?" The right answer was Wheaties, but Oliver answered wrong: Frosted Flakes. Everyone knew it was time for DeGeneres to push the button and make Oliver fall. "I'm not ready," Oliver yelled. Ellen fake pushed the drop button many times, but still managed to catch Oliver by surprise. Even though she didn't win, Oliver said the whole experience was amazing. "People I haven't seen in years have been contacting me, telling me they saw me on the show," she said. And that was the article, Goodyear Native Competes on Ellen's Game of Games. Next, officials discuss recycling in the West Valley. Posted February 6th. Recycling for area residents is more complicated than simply throwing materials into the bin and rolling it outside with little thought. With recent sanctions on recyclable materials and ever-changing rules and regulations on what can be reused and sold to manufacturers, cities in the West Valley had to change procedures and spend more time educating the public. Materials are taken from the homes of recyclers, brought to a material recovery facility, or MRF, then sorted by conveyor belt. Workers sift through the potentially recyclable materials and dispose of the items contaminated or otherwise non-acceptable. The non-recyclables are transported to landfills with other solid waste from regular garbage pickup, while the recyclables are baled and transported to manufacturers. In years past, recyclables were transported out of the country in large portions, especially to China. However, the Chinese have made drastic changes to their collection of items like newspaper. Recently, the country stopped allowing many recyclables due to contamination of materials, as they want the items to be nearly perfectly clean. "We became so used to throwing everything in the recycle bin if it just started having too many contaminants. So now China has made these changes. "It's changed everything on our end," said Goodyear Solid Waste Superintendent Adam Kurtz. Phoenix, which has not changed its $26.80 monthly rate in several years, will need to make changes to deal with new costs and demands, according to a recent city council report. The city is looking at options from maintaining current service but raising rates to eliminating recycling. The city of Surprise suspended its recycling program in August, moving all materials once recyclable to the landfill due to rising costs. Glendale is also considering changes to its recycling program, which costs the city $1 million per year. Other cities are looking for new buyers. "Contamination was overlooked for many years because China overlooked it," said Peoria Public Works Director Kevin Burke. "And while there are no scheduled changes, the cities in the area are looking at potentially making them. There's not a lot of facilities coming to the table to make our domestic market more aggressive, to bring more recyclables here in the state. All the places we once had outlets are closing their ports to us, so we'll have to see what happens," said Ruiz. "It may get to a point where we have to bring our concerns to the city, and then we'll have some choices to make about costs or what services can be provided. At the MRF, the materials are sorted by machines by material type, alongside workers sifting through the items." Kurtz said often people organize their recyclables in plastic bags. However, those often get stuck in the machines and cause delays or functional issues. Kurtz called bagged recyclables the number one problem for Goodyear Recycling. "People mean well by bagging their recyclables. The problem is, when it's picked up, it's causing issues with conveyor belts. 9 times out of 10, if they see it bagged, they'll end up throwing it out instead," Kurtz said. Fees and what is accepted for recycling varies widely around the West Valley. Monthly charges and policies from city websites: Avondale, $20, accepts aluminum, metal, aerosol cans, cardboard, paper, chipboard, glass bottles or jars with no lids, caps, and plastic. Buckeye charges $21.44 and accepts plastic and glass bottles, aluminum and metal cans, paper, and cardboard. Glendale, $21.80, accepts aluminum cans, cardboard, cartons, chipboard, mixed paper, newspaper, steel, tin, and plastic containers carrying the recycling symbols 1 and 2. No glass. Goodyear charges $22.80 and accepts paper, glass bottles and jars without lids, plastics 1 through 7, steel, tin, aluminum, cardboard, and paperboard. Peoria charged $15.29 per barrel, accepted cardboard, paper, aluminum, and tin cans and jars, glass bottles and jars, and plastic bottles with caps screwed on. Tolleson, $15, accepts paper, cardboard, plastics 1 through 6, aluminum cans, steel, tin, and glass bottles and jars. Burke urged recyclers to follow the rules as closely as possible. "We want people to keep it simple. Don't get creative," he said. Recycling in the West Valley is not completely restricted to the curbside pickup the cities provide either. There are other options for second, third, or further uses of the materials people want to rid from their homes. Glendale Field Operations Director Michelle Wojtenko encouraged residents to look into second-hand stores like Goodwill, Salvation Army, or others, and to figure out other creative ways to make use of resources not acceptable in the city's MRF. "If you've got furniture, you've got clothing that's still got some use to it, look at those nonprofits. Look at those ways you can recycle as well, just not in our program," Wojtenko said. Each city has its own recycling policy for residential pickup, and the local governments have pages on their respective websites listing the do's and don'ts of local recycling. And while the officials hope their residents are aware of the rules affecting them, several understand they need to make an improved effort in making themselves and recycling rules more accessible. As we continue to grow, education is going to be key to continue to ensure residents understand the program. When they're moving here, we want to make it so they're getting the right information and then when they have questions, making it easier for them to find it, said Kurtz. Most homeowners have good intentions and want to do things correctly, Bert said. So the more education we can give people, the better they are going to be with it, and the better productivity we can have. And that was the article, Officials Discuss Recycling in the West Valley. Next, Litchfield Park unveils city center design at its State of the City, posted February 7th. At Saturday's State of the City meeting, the City of Litchfield Park focused on new developments, including a new downtown city center and museum. A design for the city center was unveiled at the February 1st meeting held at the church at Litchfield Park. Mayor Thomas Schoaf discussed plans to develop a central hub in Litchfield Park's downtown area for the city center property north of Wigwam Boulevard between North Litchfield and North Old Litchfield Roads. The parcels of land were purchased between 2014 and 2017. The project is expected to be completed within 5 years, according to Woody Schutten, an engineer with Litchfield Park. The idea of a city center has been discussed since 1996, according to Schoaf. Working with planners from Destination LP, the city created a work community-driven design, presented at the State of the City meeting. When we thought about what we wanted in the heart of the center, we wanted to keep with who we are, and that's the park, Schoaf said, referring to the spacious green community area in the middle of the design. Nazreen Gant, a sophomore at Awafria High School and member of the Litchfield Park Youth Council, was excited after hearing about this. Youth Council is actually already working on a gardening proposal we wanted to put in the middle of the city center, so everybody could come together, she said. Schutten noted all development within the city center is subject to the approval of the Litchfield Park Planning and Zoning Commission, with final approval from the City Council. But the city center isn't the only new development coming soon to Litchfield Park. The Sun Health Foundation is planning a residential and community center called Lakeside at La Loma on the northwest corner of Litchfield and Camelback Roads. Commercial development is expected to be completed on the southeast corner of Dysart and Camelback Roads, which will include a new Heinz self-storage, an auto zone, and the Dignity Health Emergency Room Urgent Care. More prominent to the community's culture is the remodeling and extension project of the now vacant and publicly owned home of Paul Litchfield. Here, volunteers hope to launch the P.W. Litchfield Heritage Center, a museum dedicated to the namesake of Litchfield Park and the growth of the town. I'm just proud of our leadership. They're smart. They have a sense of history. They're passionate. And I just trust them with our culture, said Judson Lowers, an 85-year-old, longtime resident, and namesake of the hall where the meeting was held. Litchfield Park had a busy 2019, with developments including $500,000 in road improvements and city park enhancements like a restroom in the village park. Last year also marked the dedication of the Jackie Robinson Little League ball field to the Litchfield Park community by the Arizona Diamondbacks and APS. The field hosts Litchfield Park's Little League team, one of the city's many youth sports and activities programs. Litchfield Park is certainly expanding, but Councilman Paul Faith reaffirmed the council's priority is to keep the local community spirit alive. I live here, my grandkids live here, you all live here, Faith told the audience. We're trying extremely hard to get what's built to be something you want and maintain our small town atmosphere. And that was the article, Litchfield Park Unveils City Center Design. Next, Goodyear Police Track Shoplifters to Queen Creek. Posted February 6th. Alleged serial shoplifters escaped from police after stealing from a Goodyear mall in December. But the Goodyear police did not give up in this case, tracking a couple from the East Valley to Queen Creek. There, a man who allegedly tried to ram police vehicles was shot by police. He and his alleged accomplice were taken into custody January 24th at Queen Creek Marketplace. A month before, Brian Garduno of Goodyear and Megan Elizabeth Reaver of Sholo allegedly shoplifted at TJ Maxx in Goodyear. Police spotted a vehicle the two were driving, but the suspects eluded an attempt to stop them. During the lengthy follow-up investigation, it was discovered the vehicle was stolen, and the two suspects were wanted for over 100 felony charges related to 41 cases of theft and shoplifting throughout the valley, resulting in over $25,000 in loss, said Lisa Berry of the Goodyear Police Department. Berry said the vehicle was located by Goodyear police officers in the East Valley and followed to the TJ Maxx at Queen Creek Marketplace. Garduno, 30, was charged with retail and vehicle theft, unlawful flight, and DUI. He was treated briefly at a hospital, then taken to Maricopa County Jail. Reaver, 27, was charged with vehicle theft. Both face a preliminary hearing Tuesday. And that was the article, Goodyear Police Track Shoplifters to Queen Creek. And now let's move on to the Wickenburg Sun. Our first story, Lady Wranglers' win streak has them in playoff picture, posted on February 5th. Like a late charging thoroughbred, Wickenburg High School's basketball team is heading down the home stretch with a tremendous amount of momentum. The Lady Wranglers, who were all but eliminated from postseason action 2 weeks ago, put together a three-game winning streak last week that gives them a chance to finish second in the 3A West Region standings and earn an automatic invitation to the 3A Conference playoffs. But it might require extending that three-game streak to six games this week. Coach Kevin Cushman's girls, 3-4 in region and 11-10 for the season, visited Kingman Academy Tuesday night, but those results were not available at press time. Then they'll host River Valley, record 2-6 and 3-16, at 5:30 p.m. Thursday, February 6, before closing out their region schedule at league-leading Northwest Christian, ranked 7-1 and 19-5, Tuesday, February 11th. In their first round of 3A West action, the Lady Wranglers lost to Kingman Academy by 5 points, 42-37, fell to host River Valley by 7 points, 42-35, and handed Northwest Christian its only loss in region, 29-24. Confidence is everything, beamed Coach Cushman after his girls celebrated their come-from-behind victory against Kingman late last week. He explained how his team won its two games last week without his daughter and the team's leading scorer, Katie, being absent at Chino Valley and only contributing 2 points at home against Kingman. A family tragedy, the sudden death of a nephew-cousin, kept Coach Cushman and his daughter from participating in the Chino Valley game, leaving assistant coach Morgan Macias and boys basketball coach Noel Hackdell in charge. In the Chino Valley game, the Lady Wranglers trailed by 4 points at 26-22, heading into the fourth quarter and fell behind by as many as 6 before scoring 7 of the final 9 points at the end of regulation time to tie the score, 32-32. In overtime, the Lady Wranglers scored the first 7 points and secured the victory from the free throw line. Against visiting Kingman, it appeared the Lady Wranglers weren't going to avenge their previous 12-point road loss to the Lady Bulldogs. After leading through the first quarter 8-6, they failed to score a single point in the second period, 8 missed shots and 8 turnovers, and trailed by 5 at halftime and through the third period. Then, behind two of the youngest players on the team, the Lady Wranglers poured in 20 points while committing only 2 turnovers in the final 8-minute segment. In the first 4 minutes, freshman Anna Olson came off the bench to score back-to-back baskets and give her team a 24-23 lead. Kingman responded by scoring 7 of the next 11 points, but Olson added 2 more points to tie the score at 30-30 with 2:15 to play. That's when sophomore guard Claire Peterson came to the rescue with a 3-point shot and 5 free throws, taking advantage of Kingman's desperation late fouls to assure the victory. Peterson finished the night with 14 points, followed by Olson and junior Payson Levitt with 6 points each. And that was the article about the Lady Wranglers basketball team. Next, ADEQ issues fish consumption warning for Horse Thief Basin Lake, posted on February 3rd. A fish consumption advisory for largemouth bass caught from Horse Thief Basin Lake in Yavapai County has been issued by Arizona Department of Environmental Quality and Arizona Game and Fish Department. The Arizona Department of Environmental Quality, ADEQ, and Arizona Game and Fish Department, AGFD, have issued a fish consumption advisory for largemouth bass caught from Horse Thief Basin Lake in Yavapai County and south of the community of Crown King. This advisory is based on recent analysis of fish tissue data that indicate elevated levels of mercury. ADEQ recommends that adults limit consumption of largemouth bass from Horse Thief Basin Lake to 2.5 ounces uncooked weight per week, and children 12 years of age and younger limit consumption to 2 ounces of uncooked weight per month. Generally, contaminant levels found in water are significantly lower than those found in fish tissue. Therefore, fishing, bird watching, and other recreational activities at the lake are not affected by this advisory and continue to be encouraged. Fish are an excellent source of protein and can be an important part of a healthy, diverse diet, as they are low in saturated fat. The American Heart Association recommends people eat at least 2 fish or seafood meals per week. The public health recommendations in this advisory are based on frequent and long-term consumption of fish, not infrequent or occasional fish meals. AGFD and ADEQ maintain a green light fisheries program listing fish species from specific waters that may be consumed without limits. And that was the article about a fish consumption advisory for largemouth bass caught in Horse Thief Basin Lake. Next, an article about things happening in Aguila, posted February 5th. Valentine's Day will soon be here. Do you need a place to take your sweetheart for a fun date out? Make a reservation at the Aguila Library for 2 p.m. Sunday, February 9th. Seating is limited, but it will be a night of fun and games for couples only. Refreshments will be provided. For more information or to reserve your space, call the library at 928-685-2214. The Aguila Library has virtual reality available until mid-February. It is a physical thing while it's being used. Come and check it out. The Aguila Elementary Lady Eagles won all 10 basketball conference games, making them number one. The Lady Eagles played in the Central Mountain Tournament at the Wickenburg Event Center on Friday, January 31st. Coach Amazola's strategic plays led the Lady Eagles in aggressive offenses and strong defenses in every game. Team captains Danitza Acosta and Areli Correz, both in eighth grade, rebounded great and combined for at least 20 points per game. Significant contributions came from Itzel Dominguez and her points to widen the gap each game. With great moves and ball handling, Adelia Valenzuela, 8th grade, and Catlin Lopez, 7th grade, made several steals and assists, while Sarah May Harjo and Ruby Delgado, 8th graders, Valerie Coronado and Claudia Tenorio, 7th graders, were also big helps in rebounds and defenses. The games were expected to be more intense at Friday's tournament, as Wickenburg Christian Academy, Congress, Cannon, Morristown, Festival Foothills, and Aguila meet again to fight for the championship. The Aguila boys basketball team played well this season and took third place with 6 wins and 4 losses. And that was about updates in Aguila. Next, Pereira jumps into the race, posted February 5th. Wickenburg Mayor Rui Pereira is running for re-election. Last week, he completed a statement of interest and pulled a nomination packet to begin the election process. Pereira became mayor June 17, 2019, after defeating former Mayor Everett Sickles in the May 21, 2019 recall election. Pereira joined Sickles' wife, Patty Sickles, as those who have submitted statements for the 2020 election. 3 council seats are up for election this year as well: Vice Mayor Royce Cardinal and council members Kelly Blunt and Sam Crispin are each declining to run for re-election. Wickenburg residents Noel Rosen, Nash Oliver, and Margaret Nyberg have submitted statements and pulled nomination packets to be on this year's ballot. Potential candidates for both mayor and council seats have until April 6th to turn in between 132 and 263 signatures on the candidacy petitions. The town clerk and county election offices then verify the signatures. Arizona's primary election is August 4th, and November 3rd is the general election. Voters need to be registered by July to be qualified to vote in the primary, and by October 5th to be eligible for the general. The new mayor and council will be seated December 7th. And there are three obituary notices since last week. The first, Donna Pearl McKentifer, Amber Marie Grantham, and Jonathan David Paul Madewell. And a reminder that you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is the West Valley News Digest, and I'm Gayla, your volunteer reader. Now let's move on to news from Glendale, Peoria, and Surprise. First article, the Chocolate Experience Festival takes over downtown Glendale this weekend. Glendale's long-running chocolate affair transforms into the Chocolate Experience. Discover a new spin on Glendale's long-running chocolate affair in 2020 as the City of Glendale presents the Chocolate Experience. The Chocolate Experience goes 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday, February 8th, and noon to 5 on Sunday, February 9th, at the Glendale Civic Center, 5750 West Glen Drive. This year, the event moves from an outdoor festival to a more intimate experience, with select chocolatiers and confectioners, craft artisans, artistic performances, wine and chocolate pairings, and live music on the Fountain Terrace. Soretta Candy Company will offer free tours of the candy factory, as well as its chocolate pizza-making booth. Free admission and parking, plus free shuttle rides to and from Soretta's. Visit glendaleaz.com/events or call 623-930-2299. Next, Antique Tractor Engine Show highlights Glendale's roots this weekend. Event returns to Saguaro Ranch for the 30th year. A variety of gas engines and tractors from a bygone era will be showcased at the 30th Annual Winter Antique Tractor and Engine Show, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. each day, Saturday and Sunday, February 8th and 9th, at Glendale's historic Saguaro Ranch, 9802 North 59th Avenue. The event will include engine displays and demonstrations, tractor pulls, food vendors, Saguaro Ranch historic home tours, and hay rides. A kids' corner will feature an array of hands-on activities for children of all ages, including pedal tractors, barrel train rides, craft activities, duck races, water pumping, corn grinding, and a make-and-take planting activity. Admission is $5 per person, and children under the age of 12 are free with a paying adult. The event is presented by the Arizona Early Days Gas Engine and Tractor Association, a nonprofit organization founded in 1979 with more than 450 family memberships in 8 states in the U.S. as well as Canada. Call 623-435-3955. Next, drive-through permits for Portillo's Hot Dogs and Ono's Hawaiian Barbecue go before Glendale Planning Commission on Thursday. Posted on February 5th. In its Thursday night meeting, the Glendale Planning Commission will consider allowing drive-thrus at two restaurants coming to North Glendale. A Portillo's Hot Dogs is being added just outside the Arrowhead Town Center, and an Ono Hawaiian Barbecue is being added northeast of 59th Avenue and Bell Road. Both fast casual restaurants are asking for a conditional use permit to include a drive-thru in their restaurant. Each restaurant is allowed and approved in its respective commercial district, but drive-thrus are not automatically allowed under their commercial zoning and require specific permission from the Planning Commission. The city's planning staff has recommended the commission approve each request. Plans for Portillo's calls for a complete teardown and rebuild of the existing Old Country Buffet at 17125 North 79th Avenue, southwest of the Arrowhead Town Center. The building will be about 8,000 square feet and will feature patio seating. The site is located between the Ariba Mexican Restaurant and the Spring Hill Suites Hotel. Construction is expected to start the first quarter of 2020. The Chicago-based hot dog chain is the fourth in the valley and first in the Northwest Valley. The Glendale location will be open 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. 7 days a week. Peak hours are typically 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. and 4 to 6 p.m. on weekdays, according to city staff's report. Ono will be put in the former R.T. O'Sullivan Sports Bar at 5830 West Bell Road, a 7,566-square-foot building in shopping center anchored by Winco Foods. The site is between a T-Mobile store and an El Pollo Loco drive-thru restaurant. And that was the article, Drive-Thru Permits for Portillo's Hot Dogs and Ono's Hawaiian Barbecue, going before the Glendale Planning Commission. Next, Arizona Winds puts on free Disney blockbuster concert at Cactus High Sunday. The Arizona Winds will bring 9 Disney films to life on stage with accompanying video production at a free concert 3 p.m. Sunday, February 9th at the Cactus High School Auditorium, 6330 West Greenway Road in Glendale. Arizona Winds is an 85-member concert band located in Glendale and conducted by musical director Lieutenant Colonel Richard Shelton, USAF retired. Colonel Shelton has selected 9 of the all-time most popular and memorable award-winning animated Disney films, beginning with the world's first full-length cell animated feature film and the earliest Disney animated film, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, produced in 1937. Alice in Wonderland was Walt Disney Productions' 13th release of a full-length animated feature film, and since its premiere in 1951, is regarded as one of Disney's greatest animated classics. The 1953 Disney released its 14th animated film. The fantasy adventure Peter Pan was a story about a boy who wouldn't grow up and his Neverland nemesis, Captain Hook. In 1964, Disney Productions won 5 Academy Awards and 9 nominations for the fantasy musical film Mary Poppins, starring Julie Andrews and Dick Van Dyke, featuring songs like A Spoonful of Sugar, Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, and Feed the Birds. The 1967 animated musical comedy The Jungle Book was the last film to be produced by Walt Disney, who died during its production. The Little Mermaid, the 1989 animated musical romantic fantasy film, was loosely based on the Danish fairy tale of the same name by Hans Christian Andersen, and won Academy Awards for Best Original Score and the Best Original Song, Under the Sea. Disney's 1991 release of Beauty and the Beast, its 30th animated feature film, also won Academy Awards for Best Original Score and Best Original Song, and was the first animated film in film history to be nominated for Best Picture. The band concludes the program with excerpts from Disney's 2009 5-time Academy Award-nominated 3D computer-animated comedy-drama-adventure film Up. On Sunday, April 5th, the band will present yet another music and film production featuring musical excerpts and video clips from oldies but goodies, such as Casablanca, The Magnificent Seven, South Pacific, Ben-Hur, The Ten Commandments, From Russia with Love, The Wizard of Oz, The King and I, and more. Arizona Winds is celebrating its 45th year in the West Valley. The band's musicians is comprised of adults from across the valley and represents numerous professions, from music educators to engineers, homemakers to accountants. And that was the article, Arizona Winds puts on free Disney blockbuster concert at Cactus High on Sunday. Next, fundraiser for man killed in Westgate shooting to be held today, Saturday. A memorial fundraiser will benefit a man who was shot and killed during a parking dispute at Westgate. Tyler Michael Wilson, 31, was killed January 29th near 95th and Glendale Avenues. Glendale police said he was a passenger in a vehicle that was trying to back into a parking space while another vehicle was approaching. Mr. Wilson got into an argument with the other vehicle's driver, who then shot Mr. Wilson and fled. Mr. Wilson was an employee of Purgatory Industries, an auto shop in Avondale. Police continue to look for the alleged shooter. The fundraiser is at 4 p.m. today at Mixteca, 6731 West Bell Road. A GoFundMe page for Mr. Wilson has raised over $7,000. Anyone with information on the shooting can call 623-930-3000. Now we move on to the weekly edition of the Peoria Independent, published Wednesday, February 5th. The leading article, Too Good Not to Be Better. Deep Within launches a $250,000 capital campaign. When Nelson Hurlburt ended up at Deep Within Rehab 7 years ago with just two duffel bags and their contents to his name, he did not have any intentions of getting clean and sober. It was not his first attempt at recovery or a recovery center, but he said something was different about the faith-based all-male program that somehow led him to redemption. While there, he was given the tools to rise above his addiction and eventually go on to live a productive and wonderful life. His experience in the rehabilitation program reminded him of the value of hard work, a key component of the program. This was not an easy program, but they told us that in the beginning. Nothing worth having ever comes easy, Mr. Hurlburt said. Then, one day, everything just changed. I finally believed in God. After that, everything made sense, and everything fell into place. Deep Within has been a staple in Peoria for more than 15 years, meeting a critical and urgent need that co-founders Lee and Cindy Humes say is not being met by any other agency in the West Valley. And now with homelessness as well as alcohol and drug abuse at ever-increasing levels, they say it is time for Deep Within to really raise a flag in the region. After years of expanding and improving facilities using program revenue on their two-acre property at 91st and Grand Avenues, home to 8 buildings and up to 35 residents, the property owner has offered to sell it to Deep Within. So the nonprofit has launched a capital campaign to raise $250,000 for a down payment toward the purchase of the property. Mr. Hume said the shelters downtown are already full, and he is asking the public to contribute to a needed cause in the West Valley. Owning the $1 million property, he said, would allow the organization to transition into an Arizona-licensed substance abuse treatment facility and hire a full-time licensed clinical director to facilitate substance abuse groups on site while saving $4,000 a month. This will make a huge impact on the lives Deep Within serves, Mr. Hume said. Come on board with me. Surprise, Peoria, El Mirage, Youngtown. We'll have our space where we can say, we have a place to send you, Mr. Hume said. What's the old cliche? We'll show you how to fish. I can feed you a meal and show you how to do it for the rest of your life. That's what we're doing here. We're showing these guys how to transition from homelessness to productiveness, to be a productive member of society. The organization provides a safe, clean, drug, and alcohol-free environment for men living on the street. This includes 3 meals a day, hygiene items, clothing, employment training, and recovery support. Mr. Humes, 60, said Deep Within does not receive state or government funding, but instead receives charitable donations and generates revenue through employment opportunities throughout the valley that its residents, directors, and family participate in. Mr. Hume said residents in his program will work, and there is a 75% success rate. Residents also take part in maintenance and improvements to the property. Over the years, Mr. Hume said Deep Within has invested thousands of dollars into improving the property. Updates include air conditioning units, improvements to industrial-grade kitchen appliances, bringing the kitchen up to code, and a fire sprinkler system in the dorm. At one point, the city of Peoria wanted to condemn the buildings that were riddled with problems, ranging from bad wiring to poor plumbing, he said. Everything we work for goes back into making sure we are still here tomorrow, Mr. Hume said. The race has to be finished, and Deep Within still has to be here after my days have gone by. We can do more. We're too good not to be better. Look what we've done so far. Councilwoman Vicki Hunt, who represents a southern portion of Peoria and has been associated with Deep Within for 15 years, is familiar with the contributions members of the center have made to the community. They are a selfless group committed to helping alcoholics attain and maintain their sobriety through Bible study and hard work. I appreciate their ethic that if you are working hard, you don't have idle time to think about your problems, she said. I respect their work, and I hope they can raise enough money to own their buildings, as the very men they serve have put their own labor into restoring and maintaining them. Unsheltered homelessness increased for the sixth year in a row in Maricopa County, according to the annual point-in-time homeless count. The homeless population in Peoria increased by 40 individuals from 38 in 2018 to 78 in 2019, an increase of just over 200%, according to the count. Countywide, 6,614 people experienced homelessness, 316 more than during the 2018 count. Mr. Hume said homelessness and addiction are two sides of the same coin. The residents that stay at Deep Within have addiction problems and have been living on the streets. The organization has been able to capture some of this potential labor and volunteer force and redirect it back to the community. Deep Within has been working with the City of Peoria Neighborhood Pride Program for more than 10 years to do this. Neighborhood specialist Colleen Ilf said Deep Within has done everything from yard work prep to house painting for the betterment of Peoria. If I call Lee for help, he always helps with whatever I need, she said. Deep Within has been a good friend to this program. Most recently, Deep Within workers came to the aid of Tabby Brown, whose elderly mother has been sick with cancer and has been required by her HOA to repaint her home near 103rd and Olive Avenues. Deep Within has agreed to provide the labor to paint the home, as well as landscaping maintenance. Miss Brown, who has been taking care of her mother, said she is deeply grateful for volunteers from Deep Within, especially since she is on a fixed income, with money being spent on doctor's appointments and cancer treatments. They are knowledgeable and extremely helpful. It is a godsend they have shared their expertise and abilities. Labor can be really expensive, and if they have been more helpful than people could realize, Ms. Brown said, Mom doesn't need to have the stress of having to get her house painted. Mr. Holbert is now married and has a child. He says Deep Within is his home away from home, and that the program saved his life and allowed him to create another. Because of Deep Within, Mr. Holbrook said, he will always have a family and home. My life is amazing, not perfect and definitely not easy, but it is beyond anything I ever thought I could achieve when I showed up there back in 2013, he said. I owe everything to that program and the people who have been there day in and day out doing God's work. And that was the article about Deep Within launching its $250,000 capital campaign. Next, driverless shuttle headed for Peoria. 60-day pilot program begins February 22nd. The City of Peoria has officially gotten into the autonomous vehicle business, and it will come in the form of a shared-ride autonomous shuttle to service the Arrowhead area. The City Council unanimously approved $78,500 for a 60-day autonomous vehicle pilot program with operator Beep, a Florida-based autonomous mobility solutions company. The fully electric driverless shuttle is set to launch on Saturday, February 22nd, with a ribbon-cutting scheduled date. The shuttle is expected to service a busy spring training 2020. The San Diego Padres and Seattle Mariners begin the season February 22nd at the Peoria Sports Complex. The shuttle can move up to 10 passengers at a time and will operate at a maximum speed of 15 miles per hour as part of the pilot program. It will be open to the public and free to ride. Public Works Director Kevin Burke said this is a vehicle with no driver, no steering wheel, no pedal, no driver's seat. It is truly autonomous. The shuttle is a Level 5 vehicle, meaning it can operate entirely on its own without any driver present, he said. However, that's not how we will operate it. We will have an attendant on board at all times in this vehicle who will make sure people get on and off safely. They can explain the technology, answer questions, serve as eyes and ears in case there is something that requires assistance, Mr. Burke said. Beep essentially presented a turnkey operation to the city that brings the vehicle along with the permits, the insurance, the attendants, etc. The ADA accessible shuttle will operate daily from noon to 6 p.m. in the P83 Entertainment District on Arrowhead Fountain Center Drive, from Huntington University to Paradise Lane. It will use a pre-programmed fixed route with a combination of localization techniques involving high-powered sensors and cameras. I love this. I am not sure I'm ready to get in a Waymo or something and go down the freeway, but this is just my speed. Horse and buggy to this, Councilwoman Vicki Hunt said. The city of Peoria has been keeping a close eye on transportation trends and specifically how they may manifest themselves in the West Valley. In a study session last year, Deputy City Manager Eric Strunk said the city needs to know where transportation trends are heading and how they could impact Peoria in the coming decades. Our goal is to share the enhancements and what we call disruptions to transportation, as they are occurring in the world. They will eventually find their way to Peoria. With that, one of our goals is to be ready for them, Mr. Strunk said. The autonomous shuttle is one of those enhancements. Mr. Burke said it developed late last year and city officials saw it as an opportunity for the Peoria's transit system. He said the pilot program is an opportunity for Peoria to learn what transportation solutions are the best fit for the community alongside current transportation options. Now we move on to the Surprise Independent and cover story, A Grove Growing in a Desert. Open farmland transforms into Toll Brothers Master Plan. It's hard to believe that some surprise farmland on the west side of town will become a city within its own city over the next year. Then again, the way that part of Surprise is expected to grow over the next few years, it shouldn't be too much of a shocker. This is huge for us, Surprise City Councilman Patrick Duffy said. It's finally that Prasada plan we saw 12 years ago. This is a big deal. The big deal Mr. Duffy is referring to is a big housing project that is bringing a subdivision unlike any other in Surprise. Toll Brothers officially held its grand opening January 25th and 26th for its Sterling Grove development. Between Cactus Road and Peoria Avenue to the north and south, and 175th Avenue and Cotton Lane to the west and east, after 3 weeks of pre-sales. Over the next 8 years, the development is expected to bring 4,500 to 5,000 new residents as 2,200 homes are planned this decade. Home buyer options include 8 luxury home collections and 31 home designs. Sizes range from 1,421 to 4,047 square feet, with prices set between $350,000 to more than $500,000. But more impressively, the builder hopes the amenities it's planning, including a 35,000-square-foot clubhouse, a Jack Nicklaus-designed 18-hole golf course, 3 pools, tennis and pickleball courts, and walking trail area will make it a hit with homebuyers, who could be moving in as soon as August. We've made it where once you're in the gate, you'll feel comfortable to do everything and anything here, said Kevin Rosinski, Senior Vice President for Toll Brothers. The company said it wanted to build in Surprise not only for the growth of the city, but more especially the media area. This summer's opening of a new Costco warehouse on Waddell Road near Loop 303, plus a new Abrazo Community Hospital on Loop 303 and Bell Road, are just 2 projects that sparked Toll Brothers' excitement about coming to Surprise. Sterling Grove is going up on land that used to be owned by the Mormon Church, which it leased to farmers. In fact, Google Earth images still show nothing but farmland in that square mile. But within the year, people will start moving into the luxury homes that are already getting rave reviews. I'm an open concept person when it comes to houses, Mr. Duffy said. You can tell walking in there why Toll is probably the best builder in Arizona. Toll Brother designers were hoping to capitalize on the popularity of living in the Phoenix, Arcadia, and Biltmore areas and its 5 historic neighborhoods. People like living there because of the grass and the trees and the architecture, Mr. Rosinski said. So we wanted to bring the grass, trees, and architecture here. Sterling Grove is trying to accomplish 2 things: offering up resort-style living while also resembling what Mr. Rosinski calls hometown Americana. He wants homebuyers to think of the courtyard scenes in the popular 1980s time travel movie Back to the Future. What we really wanted to do was offer resort lifestyle luxury community that maybe the West Valley is sort of seeing, but we wanted to do something that nobody has really seen with the amount of detail and amenities we put in, Mr. Rosinski said. It will feature two main entries, including a replica of a farmhouse. Drivers will pass at the gated entry. We wanted to feel that it could have been the original farmhouse on the site, Mr. Rosinski said. The architecture looked like it could have been built in the 30s, 40s, or 50s. At the entry off the Cactus Road, residents will meet a community ambassador working the gate, then drive up to the country club. Added touches include raising up the clubhouse, which includes the fitness center, to facilitate nature. We perched it up 12 feet, so you can see nothing but amazing views when you're in the club, Mr. Rosinski said. The clubhouse will be built in two phases, with the second phase about 4 years down the line. But the main features inside, such as the golf clubhouse and the fitness center, will be among the first finished. You can do everything and anything you want day one, Mr. Rosinski said about the January 2021 opening date. The home builders broke up the clubhouse into three sections and included three pools, a fitness lap pool, a resort lifestyle pool, and a tranquil pool. The tranquil pool sits on the edge of a 15-foot drop, which gives the negative edge illusion. It's kind of on its own like peninsula here with an amazing view of the white tanks, Mr. Rosinski said. The pool areas include a bar where people can use to order food and drinks from the water, or golfers can take a break from playing between holes 6 and 7. Toll Brothers has built 10 cottages in the complex called Stay and Plays that give potential home buyers a chance to experience all the amenities of the community. The 1,000-square-foot units are designed like hotel suites, with a master bedroom and kitchen included. I think a lot of people want to experience things before they buy it, Mr. Rosinski said. You can do that walking through the model park, but until you live there and stay overnight, you may not know exactly what it's like. And we have to cut that article short, because we're out of time. Thank you for joining me for the West Valley News Digest. I'm Gayla Weigel, your SunSounds volunteer. Please stay tuned for more great programming from SunSounds of Arizona.